The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to the How to Kill an Hour, the half-hour edition brought to you by Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care. And now, without further ado, here's your host for the next 30 minutes, the one, the only, the Ed Man.
Oh, yeah. Welcome once again to the How to Kill an Hour radio show. I'm your host, the man with a plan, the Ed Man, here to give you some news and insights from the past week. And if we could, let's start off by giving a little chuckle, ha 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 ha, to the Democrats. Because after the midterms, you'd figure that it would be a big show of unity. But all I'm seeing is a bunch of infighting between the different factions of the Democrat Party, the leftists and the far leftists, a.k.a. the progressives. And they're going at it each other like a bunch of little kids, man, like siblings fighting constantly. You would think that they would agree with things, but nope, they are tearing each other apart. And one bone of contention right now is who is going to be the Speaker of the House. Now, the odds-on favorite, of course, is Nancy Pelosi, who nobody wants, including the Democrats. However, she has been endorsed this week by a certain Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump is such an enigma to me, even to this very day. It's hard for me to determine whether or not he's a complete and total genius, or if everything that he does is just an act. And he is basically Maxwell smarted. He has bumbled his way into this position. But listen, guys, the chances of somebody lucking into the presidency has got to be 0%, right? It has to be. So Trump must be capable of doing what many people have accused him of doing, which is playing 4D chess, not just chess, not 3D chess like on Star Trek, but 4D chess. In other words, the ability to see far ahead into the future and determine where the pieces on the board are going to be at another point in time. You know, now that he's endorsed Pelosi, I'm starting to really think he's the 4D chess guy, because this is possibly the most obvious move. But when you watch him endorse her, he sounds so sincere. Let me play you a little clip. Now, keep in mind that this clip is after he had tweeted out saying that he would get as many Republican votes as Nancy Pelosi needs to win. She deserves it. Now, the Washington Post ran this story and said that Trump is backing Pelosi, and this time he sounds like he's not joking. And Vox ran a similar story. So this means that he has convinced the establishment press that he is serious. So people are taking him seriously on this point. All right, here's the clip.
We should get along and get deals done. Now, we can investigate. They look at us, we look at them. It goes on for 2 years. Then at the end of 2 years, nothing's done. Now, what's bad for them is being in the majority. I'm just going to blame them. You understand? I'm going to blame them. They're the majority. Honestly, it makes it much simpler for me. They will be blamed. But I think Nancy Pelosi, and you know, I put that statement out on social media today about Nancy Pelosi, that if she's short of votes, because frankly, I think she deserves, and a lot of people thought I was being sarcastic or I was kidding. I wasn't. I think she deserves it. She's been fighting long for it. She's been fighting. I really mean this. There was nothing sarcastic about it, or it was really meant with very good intentions. I think she deserves it. She's fought long and hard. She's a very capable person. And, you know, you have other people shooting at her, trying to take over the speakership. And I said, if it's appropriate, I said, if we can and if we will, if she has a problem, I think I would be able to very easily supply her the necessary votes. That's not said in any way other than I really believe she deserves that position. I also believe that Nancy Pelosi and I can work together and get a lot of things done, along with Mitch and everybody else that we have to work with. I think we'll get a lot done.
Now, how do you fight this guy? So he set this up so brilliantly. He said, you heard him at the beginning of the clip, that the Democrats have the majority now in the House. So he's going to blame them if things don't get done. And he said he thinks that's fair. So he's come out openly and says he is going to blame the Democrats. So he sets up that threat. Then, on top of that, he makes nice with Pelosi. So he's appealing to her ego. And he is kind of making a little miniature deal here in open public, saying, I'm going to get you the votes that you need. And especially after having such animosity towards her before the election. Now, you didn't hear it in the clip that I just played, but he basically chalked that up to, well, it's an election. Now the election's over. We can all be friends. So he's excusing his past behavior and contrasting how nice he's being towards her now. I would think that that would appeal to her ego even more, because she thought he was a big enemy, and now he's coming at her saying, hey, let's go be friends. I'm sorry for what was happening before, you understand. It's just political. Now let's get things done. With still the overlying threat that I'm going to blame you guys if things don't work out. So you'd better do what I am telling you to do. The man is brilliant. Then you have the aspect of the whole world. He now has the mainstream press basically saying that he is serious this time and he really does want to be friends with Pelosi and get things done. So now he's garnering the favor of independents, probably of many Democrats who support Pelosi, and at the same time, the animosity of progressives who don't support her at all. But he's basically taking the establishment and bringing them all together under his tent, under his control. It's genius. To say nothing of how this sets up his 2020 run. I mean, running against Pelosi, how can he lose? He has really hit this from all angles. Now, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the youngest member ever elected to Congress. And boy, does it show. She is, she's a firebrand, man. She is just lashing out in all directions against anyone that dares say a word to her. If you've seen her in any interviews, you know that she's really not that, intellectual, I guess would be the way to put it. And she has no idea on the planet how economies work at all. If this group of people got in, these progressives, I really do think we would be in a lot of trouble. But it is a lot of fun to watch the infighting between the Democrats. So you have the far, far left progressive wing of the Democrats who wants free everything. They want Medicare for all. Now, they're claiming that 70% of the country is with them on this, including Republicans. I mean, I wouldn't be that surprised. I know that there are Republicans who wanted, Obamacare to happen. I understand, you get sold this bill of goods. They're saying that they're going to help people out. It's going to save lives. But it ends up raising the price of everything and making it where less people have access to quality health care. It takes the overall level of health care and brings it down. How many private practice doctors are there around right now compared to, 30 years ago, right? All of these programs, they up the cost and they lower the quality. Look at college. Remember when the biggest trouble was that, oh my God, my parents don't have money. I'm going to have to work my way through college. Now you can't even do that. Now you've got to take out a loan. If you want to go to a good college, you've got to take out a loan to be able to do it. And then you come out in debt. And now the government wants to run more programs to be able to take care of that problem. Every single time that they step in, realize that they're going to raise the price and they're going to lower the quality. And it's the same game over and over again. And if you want to stump these people, all you got to do is say, how are you going to pay for it? And you get these nonsensical answers. I'll tell you what the answer always is. And this is how they get these things passed. they run a study, some phony baloney study, and the study says, well, you know, if you do this program, you're going to save so much money that it's worth spending all this money to implement the program. And for some reason, the savings never come, the money gets spent, and now other programs have to be implemented to deal with the carnage. And then those programs create even more problems. This is a cycle that happens again and again, and we keep falling for it. But we can enjoy the fireworks and hope that none of the embers set the ship ablaze. So this story is great. So during her orientation to Congress, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez organizes from my understanding, she didn't organize the sit-in, but she took part of the sit-in. This was a sit-in in Nancy Pelosi's office to encourage climate change advocates. And, you know, they want to pass these laws so that basically you are going to be paying to be able to stop climate change. I mean, I have not seen any details that make any sense on how the programs work that they want to have. All it looks like to me is you're getting taxed so that the government can help stop climate change. Now, I mean, how stupid is this? So this is their big plan, and they do a sit-in in Nancy Pelosi's office, or more like the hallway of her office, and it makes a big deal, right? And so now Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is seen as this, you know, this troublemaker, and Nancy Pelosi comes out and actually kind of sides with her and says, "Hey, I'm glad to see these activists, and climate change is an important thing, and we need to take care of it." And they want to activate a commission to, you know, look into climate change and what to do about it. So that's their big idea now for the sit-in. But they have forced Nancy Pelosi's hand. But Nancy Pelosi knows she needs their support in Congress. So she played nice, which is a huge turnaround from before, when the establishment Democrats basically treated the progressives like the children they are. And now they are infiltrating the party. So, you know, I don't like that they are winning things. Like I said, they have no idea of how money works, and they're going to destroy the economy. They simply are. But if we can have a little fun, and hopefully their damage will be controlled, then I don't mind it too much, because this is a great show, right? Okay. Now, typical of all Democrats, however, they will very swiftly jump on the bandwagon. You know, a really quick aside here. Bernie Sanders, over the past week or so, I think, has been called a racist again. So they're back on that, because Bernie Sanders went on a show and he said something along the lines of, you know, some people are a little reluctant to vote for a person of color, but they'll come around. And I can't remember which newspaper it was that ran with this, but basically they're now calling Bernie Sanders a racist for saying this. But what Bernie Sanders, for all of his faults, and I think he is one of the people that would destroy the country were he to get a hold of it, but the dude is not a racist, okay? I mean, not from anything that he's ever said or done, anyhow. I mean, you never know what's deep in someone's heart. But from all appearances, he is not a racist. As a matter of fact, I remember when Black Lives Matter came up to him on the microphone, and he totally just gave them the mic and let them talk and ruin his speech. So unlike Hillary Clinton, who met with them and was very surly with them, and, you know, Hillary Clinton, if you said Hillary Clinton was a racist, I would have no trouble believing it. If you said Bernie Sanders was a racist, I'd be like, I'll have to see the evidence for myself. So Democrats, the establishment Democrats, are calling the far leftists racist. Well, here we have now Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez calls out journalists who called her girl and judged her clothing. Now, here's The incoming lawmaker responded Thursday evening after a journalist referred to her as a girl in a tweet, critical of her clothing with a message, "Dark hates light. That's why you tune it out." So calling this journalist dark, you know, evil. Now, here's what the journalist actually said. Hang on here. The journalist actually said, "Hill staffer sent me this pic of Ocasio-Cortez they took just now. I'll tell you something, that jacket and coat don't look like a girl who struggles." Now, the tweet was quickly deleted, and it was widely criticized on Twitter, including by other journalists as sexist and inappropriate. It comes after Ocasio-Cortez suggested in a recent interview with the New York Times that it would be challenging to afford an apartment in Washington before her congressional salary kicks in. I have a feeling she'll be all right, though. Now, she's a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, and she made headlines and sent shockwaves. I'm reading from this article. And her response reflects both the scrutiny directed at her and her comfort using social media to take it on. So Ocasio-Cortez has no problem using social media. In response to the tweet scrutinizing her clothing, she wrote, quote, "If I walked into Congress wearing a sack, they would laugh and take pictures of my backside. If I walk with my best sale rack clothes, they laugh and take a picture of my backside. Dark hates light. That's why you tune it out. Shine bright and keep it pushing." She wrote in a follow-up tweet, "Oh, does Scari think he can delete his misogyny without an apology? I don't think so. You're a journalist. Readers should know your bias." Wow. Wow. Okay, so the journalist deleted the tweet, and here's what he said. "Attention, I posted a tweet earlier suggesting the incoming congresswoman looked well put together, elegant even. Despite the suggestion, she struggled. The tweet was taken as something else, so I've deleted it." Again, I will read you his original tweet, and you can decide whether or not it was complimentary. "Hill staffer sent me this pic of Ocasio-Cortez they took just now. I'll tell you something, that jacket and coat don't look like a girl who struggles." I mean, I could see it as him saying, she put it together so well, that outfit, it doesn't look like she struggles. I'll tell you something, that jacket and coat don't look like a girl who struggles. You know? Because Ocasio is claiming that she is struggling. You know, she doesn't have any money. So she went into politics, right? Now, everyone's saying that this tweet that the journalist put out is derogatory, and I could see it that way too. I'll tell you something, that jacket and coat doesn't look like a girl who struggles, implying that she has money and bought this expensive clothing. So the point isn't whether the journalist is right or wrong. The point is the immediate attack that followed on him, calling him a misogynist. Isn't that funny? So leftists will absolutely attack each other, as you could see with this. Other journalists attacking him, saying he's a misogynist. Ocasio herself saying he's a misogynist. The attack by establishment leftist press on Bernie Sanders saying he's a racist. I mean, these guys are going to tear each other apart. And like I said, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch the fireworks. I have sort of an awkward segue here. Speaking of fireworks, although I guess I should say, speaking of canceled fireworks, Hillary Clinton is looking to run again, apparently. Now, you know, there were some rumblings about her running again when she wrote the book saying what happened and basically blamed everybody except for herself. Well, that's not totally true. She says that she took responsibility, that she takes responsibility for the loss, and then proceeds to use the entire book to blame everyone and everything except for herself. So in one little sentence, she says, "I take responsibility," and then for the rest of the book, she blamed everybody else. So, I mean, that's what a Democrat thinks that taking responsibility is, just to say the words, but then not actually do anything about it, right? Then we heard her, as I played on last week's show, her saying when she was asked if she would like to run again, she said no. And then she said, but I would like to be president. Ooh, now we have a little bit stronger rumblings, right? Now, even stronger, okay? We know that Hillary Clinton basically has operatives in the press. How do we know this? From the WikiLeaks. We saw it. It's not a question. We know that she has people in the press who are very favorable to her and will even allow her to basically, I don't want to say write the article, but definitely look over the article and point out things that she doesn't want in it. And then they will take those things out, okay? Once more, this isn't WikiLeaks. This isn't a pretend thing that I'm saying. This is absolutely true. We've seen this in their emails. So now, knowing this, let me read to you a little bit of this Wall Street Journal article that sounds pretty darn positive to me regarding Hillary Clinton. All right, now get this. This is the Wall Street Journal. who wrote this? This is a comment, opinion and slash commentary written by Mark Penn and Andrew Stein. It took two people to write this article. Reinventing herself as a liberal firebrand, Mrs. Clinton will easily capture the 2020 nomination. I mean, does this already sound like an article that is just, you know, like a huge butt-kissing article to you already, right? I haven't even read the first line. That's the byline, okay? This is great, okay? Get ready for Hillary Clinton 4.0. Well, let's see. I guess if 1.0 was when we first learned about her, her 1.0, I suppose, would be her form of the first lady. And then 2.0 would be the candidate, right? It was beaten by Obama. And then 3.0 was her reinvention of herself, running against Donald Trump. And then this would be 4.0. So I guess that's right. Where was Senator Hillary in there, who loved New York and all that stuff? But I don't know. Maybe that was like 1.5 or something. But anyway, get ready for a Hillary Clinton 4.0. More than 30 years in the making, this new version of Mrs. Clinton, when she runs for president in 2020, will come full circle back to the universal healthcare promoting progressive firebrand of 1994. True to her name, Mrs. Clinton will fight this out until the last dog dies. She won't let a little thing like two stunning defeats stand in the way of her claim to the White House. Now, firebrand is come to be known as sort of a compliment. I called Ocasio-Cortez a firebrand earlier, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Firebrand means a troublemaker, right? Somebody likes to stir up trouble. And so, let's see here. It's been quite a journey. Okay, so they're saying nice things about her. Takes a village. Voiced strong support for Israel. Voted for the Iraq War. Took a hard line against Iran. This is arguably the most successful version of Hillary Clinton. She captured the hearts and minds of New York's voters and soared to an easy re-election in 2006, leaving Bill and all of his controversies behind. So they're calling that 2.0. But Hillary 2.0 could not overcome Barack Obama. All right. Licking her wound, she served as Secretary of State while she planned her comeback. And then she became Hillary Clinton 3.0. All right. So it says here, Mrs. Clinton has a 75% approval rating among Democrats, an unfinished mission to be the first female president, and a personal grievance against Mr. Trump, whose supporters pilloried her with chance of lock her up. This must be avenged. Well, avenged, he didn't actually lock her up. They were just saying mean things about her. That's all. I mean, they have to avenge that? And a 75% approval rating among Democrats? I don't think so. Even among Democrats, I'm going to need to see some backup for that stat. In fact, I'm just going to go ahead and call that stat a lie. I don't believe that even a little bit. Oh my God, I'm out of time. Guys, I got to